The Last Resort Podcast with Jesse Case.
Podcast time. Who's pumped? Walter.
Jesse.
Had some issues at the house, man.
Yeah, man. Bullshit.
Serious bullshit. I'll update you guys from a few episodes ago. The house is not going to be sold. The plan worked.
Victory is ours.
I owe you one, man.
It was my idea.
No, it totally worked. We got the new t-shirts. The house will not be sold. So we're still here for a while. We're in the bunker in the hills of Hollywood, and it's fun. I'm sure you're noticing the podcast.
It's late.
A little late. Yeah, man. 2 days late. We have a valid excuse this time.
Totally.
Totally valid. This was not a laziness thing. We've been scrambling to get this done really hard. Although we kept the house, it's got some shitty circuitry going on. So some sort of breaker blew in the middle of the night. Middle of the night. Dead silent. This was Friday going into Saturday when I was, gonna be recording, because I had a gig that night, but it was Yom Kippur, and as you know, we live in an Orthodox Jewish neighborhood, so everything was closed, and there was no way to. I mean, we're not gonna get an electrician out, but I thought maybe we could get some sort of generator. Maybe something could happen. Now, it's still not fixed. The problem still isn't fixed. But I finally, we went out, we got a bunch of extension cords, we got power strips, and they're leading from a neighbor's garage into the studio here. Almost like a trail of breadcrumbs for any potential thief. I have to assume in the house robbing community, that an extension cord is a good sign. There's always good shit at the end of an extension cord. I don't think I've ever followed an extension cord without finding some sort of power tool or a computer at the end. And that's sort of what's happening here. So I apologize for the lateness. We're back on schedule. You're going to have your interview with Andy Wood, co-founder of the Bridgetown Comedy Festival. That's coming up this Saturday. Already got it in the can. Going to post on Saturday because Walter and I are going to be at a wedding.
Absolutely.
In Seattle. So, look forward to hearing about that. So, Walter, before we get into today's episode, this is the Montreal episode, the Just for Laughs Comedy Festival episode. Before we get into today's episode, we had some mail sort of stacking up on us, buddy, while we were gone.
Awesome.
On the road.
What kind of mail?
You know what kind of mail.
Bills?
Love advice, Walter.
No.
It's on.
Fuck that.
Oh, it's on.
I'm not doing it.
You have to do it. People have been responding very well to the segment, Walter. It's a good segment.
It's stupid. Why do they like it?
I don't know why they connect with it, but it's a good segment. So, here we go. Gonna do some love advice. Cue the jingle, Walter.
The jingle sucks.
Dude, it's an awesome jingle. Walter, play the jingle.
Fine.
Advice of love and romance with Walter, the artificial man.
Oh, Walter, that jingle is awesome.
Fucking awful.
All right, we have some love advice. And as always, if anyone out there wants to send in your questions of love and romance for Walter, please email. Continue emailing them. We have a lot to sort through. We're always taking new ones, of course. That's you can email jesse.s.case@gmail.com. That's my email. Subject line, love advice. Walter gets it. Boom. All right, so here we go. Ready, Walter?
I guess.
All right. Dear Walter, I really hope you can provide an answer to my conundrum. I've been seeing my boyfriend now for 3 years. We met in college, and everything was going well, although he absolutely refused to let me give him fellatio. I figured he was just trying to be nice and told him that I really wanted to provide him with the same pleasure he provided me. I did also notice he never seemed to talk about his parents. We would do holidays with my folks, and he would get quiet when I would broach the subject of holidays with his family. One day, he finally told me that his parents passed away in a car crash while his mother was giving his father roadhead. Ah, it's brutal! Dude. I thought that was like an urban legend, like some story about that. Or something. I guess you just... It's a dangerous business. All right, I'm back to the letter, Walter. Thus, blowjobs always make him think of his dead mother and cause flashbacks, panic attacks, etc. This is tragic, of course, and I was wondering if this goes away. If I stay with him, will I ever be able to give him head, or is this sort of trauma permanent? Thanks, Walter. Wanda from New York, New York. Oh, man, that's heavy. That's heavy stuff. All right, Walter, I'm not touching this one with a 10-foot pole. No pun intended. Take it away, man.
Obviously, with the scenario in which the deaths occurred, it is reasonable that blowjobs would trigger severe emotions in your mate. Or, and more likely, he is lying about the whole thing because he knows you give terrible blowjobs. Since you are from New York, chances are it was pretty easy for him to get the word on the street about you. And also, the name issue. You see, Wanda, the fact of the matter is, your name is Wanda. A common rule of thumb is that the closer a woman's name is to the start of the alphabet, the better the blowjobs. For instance, Abigail's give wonderful blowjobs, Amy's as well. Slightly worse blowjobs, mainly due to less suction, occur with Brittany's. Then there is your Candace's, Camille's, and so on through Danielle's, Katie's, and the way to the end. But your fucking name is Wanda. He's probably worried his dick will get stabbed with a crooked tooth or something, or you spit acid like in the Aliens movie. Jesus Christ, I wouldn't let you near my cock. You probably give head like a statue and don't understand the art of working the cock. It makes me sick. Lose some weight or something. Thank you for your question.
What the fuck, Walter?
Advice of Love and Romance with Walter, the Artificial Man.
All right. Well, so that was Advice of Love and Romance with Walter.
Terrible segment.
I think it's a good segment. I'm sticking to my guns on that one. Okay, so one more quick thing to hammer through, and then we'll get into the Montreal stuff. We're continuing the countdown of the top five albums of the 90s. Now, took a brief hiatus in the last episode, the Marc Maron interview. It was a long one, didn't have time to get into it. So what we're going to do, we're going to knock out number two and number one all in one fail swoop. Cue the jingle, Walter. And the number two album in the top five albums of the 1990s is In Utero by Nirvana.
Really?
Dude, you knew they were going to make the top five. How are they not going to be in the top
what
five?
What about Nevermind?
And Nevermind was a bit compressed, a bit overproduced. It was a definite great album of singles, I mean, for sure. But this is an albums thing. I mean, I've gotten some emails. Why not, you know, why not anything by Biggie? Those albums, they had some clunkers on them, man. I mean, it's really hard to make a solid all the way through hip hop album. The top five albums of the thousands definitely is a hip hop record on it, which we're gonna do that list in upcoming episodes. But you know, right now we're dealing with the 90s and hip hop still getting its legs strong, still had kind of wobbly legs, you know. So In Utero by Nirvana, great record, start to finish. You know, it opens with Serve the Servants. And just from the first chord, you know, it's like a seventh chord, so they really got a lot more pop, but at the same time, it was a dirtier, fuzzier album. And you can tell, I mean, a lot of people prefer Nevermind. You can really tell on In Utero that this is what Nirvana was going for. It's what they wanted to sound like. It's a great album of just pop gems. And similar to a number five, I mean, you can hear the heroin. You can hear the heroin in the music.
Totally.
Which I'm not condoning anyone doing heroin, but when it comes to being a great rock and roll band, it sounds fucking awesome. And I really encourage everybody to listen to it. It's gotten me through many a summer. Now, number one on the top five albums of the 90s. You ready, Walter?
Ready.
All right, buddy. OK Computer by Radiohead.
Fuck yes. Dude.
Fuck yeah, dude.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome. I'm not even going to explain this album. I'm not even going to explain it. This album came from outer space. It was delivered from aliens. This is in my top five albums of all time. Not just the number one of the top five albums of the 90s. OK Computer by Radiohead it's not even rock and roll anymore. It transcends genre to just a music album. It's not danceable, really. You're not going to do a lot of dancing, but you're driving around late at night. You know what I mean? You want to throw on your headphones. You want to space out for a while. This is the album to do it. Start to finish, a perfect symphonic record. Every song flows from one to the other. There's an intermission, which Walter took a part on. You want to listen to the origins of Walter and his story with Radiohead? Go back, listen to episode 2.
Do it.
You know, it's in the backlogs on the website or iTunes or whatever. So, it has an intermission. That's a very common thing with British more pop bands. And I say pop in the British sense, not the American sense of pop. You know, I'm talking about like Blur. Had intermissions on a lot of their records. It would just be a little, 40-second sort of piano piece or something. Blur, really close to making the cut, dude, with the self-titled.
Terrific album.
Come on, opens with Beetle Bum. And then you write into song two. Blur's fucking great.
Blur is great.
We're definitely going to have to do an honorable mention sort of section on the next one, because there's so much stuff that came really close to making the cut. But OK Computer by Radiohead is the only album I've probably bought more than 10. Like, I'll buy it for people. If we're at a record store and it comes up and they haven't heard it, I'll fucking buy you this album. So if you're hanging out with me, pretend you've never heard it. So that's it. Top five albums of the 90s. Let's take it again from number five. Number five, Transmissions from the Satellite Heart by the Flaming Lips. Number four, In the Airplane Over the Sea by Neutral Milk Hotel. Number three, Homework by Daft Punk. Number two, In Utero by Nirvana. And number one, OK Computer by Radiohead. Produced by Nigel Godrich. Fucking perfect record. Okay. That does it. Put the lid on a new segment. And everybody, look, if you dig the list, whatever, buy the albums. Don't download them illegally or whatever. If anything, all right, for the sound quality, you really can tell a difference, man. If you throw on some good headphones or you have some good speakers and listening to MP3 versus CD, the sound quality they use, professionally produced CDs, they're way different than just the CD blanks you buy at Best Buy. I mean, they're basically like DVDs with the information they have on them. And you can really just hear a lot more frequencies. If you really want to go all out, buy it on vinyl. I'm not going to get that hipster on you, but that has an infinite range as far as the sound waves go. But these bands are rich. Well, there's audio engineers, there's fucking studio assistants. There's people that don't make a lot of money that make their living off you buying these records. I don't mean to get all fucking, Metallica on you. Now it's time to take you to a strange and faraway land, Montreal. I after sort of a process that felt like it was about 2 years long, I was finally accepted to the Just for Laughs Comedy Festival in Montreal, Quebec. Now, to comedians, it's sort of a big deal festival. There's a lot of all the bookers and people are there. It's like people from Paramount and shit were there watching. And I got to meet a lot of sort of long-term idols of mine. Steve Martin was there, Bob Odenkirk, Fred Willard. And it was probably the best week, comedically, of my life. Now, that means the come-down was extra hard. I mean, the next week I was in New York and just bombing. I had a few good shows. I had one that's, like, still with me. Sometimes, like, every comic, you bomb a lot. You're trying new stuff. And I think some of it had to do, I mean, it's just so burned out. I'd never been this burned out in my life. I'm still burned out. I've been doing all new stuff all the time now because I spent so long getting ready for this Montreal set that I literally, when I would start to say the opener, by the end of that week, I would literally gag. Like a physical reaction.
you know, I have this opener that's about birth control, and I would start to say the line, and I could just feel the muscles in my neck tense up from the bottom, like stop, like my vocal cords are like, dude, fucking stop saying this into a microphone. So lately I've been having a lot of just sort of snap sets where I just go up, and it's called a snap set. You just go up and you just say what's on your mind and get yourself into a corner and hopefully punch out with something funny. Needless to say, a lot of people at a lot of open mics around town think I'm psycho, because that's how I write material, is I go up with an idea or a rant and then hopefully try to work it out. And this is becoming very self-indulgent. Let's get back to Just for Laughs. So, it's in Montreal, Quebec. I was there, I think, July 12th through the 20th or something. They put me up in a suite. I've never stayed in a suite before. So I'm just a kid from the South, man. Normally, when I have a hotel room that has a kitchen in it, it means it's extra shitty, because it means the people that work at the Waffle House next door live there. But this time, it was nice, you know. And it was a beautiful week to be there. It was warm. Like we said before, you could rent bicycles and bike around. And the shows were incredible. They were at the Cabaret Juste pour Rire, which is that means, you know, the Just for Laughs stage, I guess. And you perform for a whole week, basically. You do a warm-up set, and then you do three of the New Faces shows. That's what I was a part of, the New Faces. Where they picked 20 of us from all over. So I was pretty proud of myself. I've never really been proud of myself before. It's a weird feeling. I've been arrogant, that's for sure. I've been a douche. But I've never been actually proud of myself. I think all of that was born out of insecurity. And this is the first time, instead of ego, it was actual just sort of pride. And I was pretty happy about it. Several nervous breakdowns later, I'm back in Los Angeles, exactly where I started. Not getting shit. So artistically validating, yes, but I'm making as little money as ever. How about them apples? Now, as far as the week goes, I'm not going to get super into all the personal experiences during it. I mean, I had a great time. I met some people I feel like will be lifelong friends. My buddy Nate Bargatze, he's up in a few episodes here. You know, he did New Faces, I think, 2 years ago, or maybe 3 years ago now. And he's got some good stuff coming up. And he sort of explaining to me that it's almost like your class. It's like your graduating class, or your freshman class is sort of the way I look at it. Because almost like a video game. You're up the level, but you're at the very bottom. So it's pretty strange, but I really felt sort of a connection with the other comics that I was there with. It was surprisingly supportive. Everybody was really, really cool. And yeah, despite the fact that this didn't blow me up, I didn't pop from it. You know, it's not like Montreal was in the 80s or whatever. There's no development deals. There's nothing. I think even the Hollywood Reporter, you know, and I got good reviews. I got great reviews. But even the Hollywood Reporter, the headline for their Montreal article was executives hold on to their wallets or something. But you know, I did the shows, I had a great time, and I wrote everything down. I sort of journaled every night, which I might put up on a blog or something at some point. Just because, you know, after that week, I really felt like I had an experience that very few people get to have, and I want to remember it, and I want to hold it close. I feel like I almost like know a secret now or something. And no matter what happens, you know, as end of a Kate Hudson movie as this sounds, no matter what happens in my career, you know, nobody can take that away, that brief week, that brief high that I had, that brief delusion. I feel like that's something I can always sort of smile about. So we did the shows, a lot of very, very talented comics and all very different comics. We're all sort of coming from different directions. Like if you drew a graph, it would look like a spider web. You know, we're all coming from different directions and meeting at this one point and then shooting off in other directions. I guarantee you some of these people I did these shows with are going to be very, very big, you know, very huge names. You know, and a few of them I have an interview with coming up here in just a second. This is recorded in my hotel room between 5 a.m. and 7 a.m. on a Friday morning. Thursday night at the festival, we had just finished our run of shows, and we were all picking up other shows for the weekend in Montreal, you know, part of the festival. But Doug Stanhope came into town, you know, and he's an old friend of mine. I've worked with him a couple times, and he was telling me he's having a party at a car wash, and word sort of got around that there was this all-night car wash party. So, you know, after my shows were done, you know, at the venue we were all at, we all headed over to this car wash, and everyone just got wasted, man. People may or may not have been on ecstasy. There may have been MDMA involved. And then I sort of wound up hanging out with Mike Lawrence, who is one of my fellow new faces. He and I are both sober guys. So he was my sober buddy, and we just talked. And then at around 4:30 a.m., you know, the car wash had to open soon. They were shutting us down. We decided, let's go get breakfast. And who do we spot but Melissa Villasenor, another new face, and Fahim Anwar. Now, all these comics are very different and very, very talented, brilliant, brilliant people. And I said, you know what? Mike and I are sober. You guys are fucking hammered. Let's go record a podcast and wait for the free breakfast. And that's exactly what we did. Now, most of it's inaudible because it's four people talking and I only had two mics. So I edited it down and just into sort of little vignettes of conversation. So, you know, get ready to be a fly on the wall. You know, like I said, these are people that are going to be doing some pretty big shit. And I really encourage you to follow them, tweet them up, Facebook them, do all the stuff. This is Mike Lawrence, Melissa Villasenor, Fahim Anwar, and myself at the 2010 Just for Laughs Comedy Festival in Montreal. Kicking it new faces style. I'm not even going to delete that. You need to know that just happened. You need to know that that just came out of my mouth. All right, here it goes.
Yes.
Now, Michael, yeah. You were molested at a McDonald's.
Yeah. Speaking of beardy man, huh?
yeah, it's hilarious.
I was molested at a McDonald's, which I would have talked about if we were given 7 minutes, but that was the one thing I had to cut.
You can cover it in a minute?
No.
You can cover molestation at McDonald's in 1 minute?
I'm actually...
All you need is you need an extra minute to...
I'm waiting for my own ZooFest special.
You need another minute to cover the reason you're a comic? I
I used to joke that I was like fry sexual, and
right. How old were you?
I was when I was molested. I was 20.
Okay.
And so we're on the bus, and he's just like, you know what I like? White dick.
Right.
I just want your white dick inside my brown asshole. And starts, like, fucking hitting on me. And
right.
here's what's great about it. By the way, Melissa's laughing and crying at the same time. This is the... but anyway.
Well, so, I think it was your portrayal that was funny. I don't think the... Obviously,
well,
it's...
you know, that's all right. What ends up happening... This is how I try to dissuade a molester. I was like, hey, I'd love to do stuff with you, but I have a girlfriend. Because that's going to stop somebody, you know.
That's awesome that you're still nice. You're still diplomatic
yeah.
to
oh,
the guy.
I was fucking terrified. And he was, like, great. He was like, well, she don't have to know about shit. So.
Wow.
But it ends up happening. He takes me to a TGI Fridays.
You still went with him.
I was on the bus. So. You're telling me that every time someone asks for your white dick, you walk away? Come on. Some people just want to be needed.
I know,
and,
buddy. I know.
So we go to the TGI Fridays. I order the most expensive thing on the menu, huh? That's right. Get jalapeno poppers. And
well, now they have that. Now they have that three course deal.
Yeah,
you know.
Oh, I would have taken advantage of that. And when he goes to the bathroom, I just leave. And then, but I end up working with him the next day, and we're in the freezer, and he just puts his hand on my crotch and squeezes my dick, and goes, "You ain't gonna leave now, are you?"
Whoa.
And I just fucking, like, I jerk away and just run out.
Wow, man.
And it was, you know, that was the moment I realized I wanted to make other people laugh.
Yeah. That would do it, man.
Yeah.
I mean, does everybody feel good?
Feel great.
Yeah? Melissa, I want to talk to you for a second. You're pretty drunk right now.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. What's up? I mean, that was. Is that not a common thing for you to party? Oh, Melissa,
it's,
take
you know
the,
what?
Take
the okay, mic. Okay. It's not common lately. You know, I.
Well, you seem pretty out there.
Yeah, yeah. When I drink, it's just a lot of fun, you know.
No, and totally.
I all my life, like I've always been kind of a sheltered person. I've always been. Just always at home. I never really went out and stuff. And then, like, just recently, you know, I've just been having a good time with friends and drinking and stuff. It's, you know, it's...
Yeah, yeah. When'd you...
It's important. I mean, it's fun, you know? It's,
yeah,
it's,
yeah. When did you move to... When did you move to L.A.?
I've actually lived there all my life. My family is from Whittier. And...
Your last name is Villaseñor?
Mm-hmm. Mexican.
Okay.
But I'm very, very... Americanized. I don't know a lot of Spanish. Well, I can understand a little bit of it, but yeah.
All right.
So that's kind of me, and I've just always done impressions and stand up and just commute to LA.
Well, we auditioned the same show last year.
Yeah, I remember. You know?
Yeah,
my
yeah.
Parents actually really loved you.
Oh, your parents were there?
Yeah.
Oh,
they were
cool.
At the Comedy Magic Club.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Thank you. No, I thought you were very funny. Now, do you consider yourself an impressionist? Is that like a bad word for people that do impressions? Or
no. I think that's cool. I think it's, you know, it's one of my strengths. I guess. I think I like a lot of other things though. Like I want to start talking about myself and my stand up and. Do characters and sketch and improv and acting too. So there's a lot of things I love, and singing too. So there's so many things I really like to do. I'm just talking like truthfully.
Why
like,
doesn't she sound more shit-faced?
I know. I know. Because here's the deal: is we came back here basically to kill time before breakfast.
Yeah, yeah,
free
yeah,
breakfast.
Yeah. Okay, so let's.
And we're gonna sneak these two. In.
All right.
No, you're staying here. We're gonna sneak this guy into the free breakfast. You know what I mean?
I am not here at this
But we're
hotel.
We're sneaking him into breakfast. We're sneaking him in
yeah.
breakfast. We'll just say you're staying in my room, dude.
It is. There is. Hey, I use dope, and I guess
before, you're. Before you went on stage, should you pull up your hoodie and like talk about mom's spaghetti?
No, I feel like it's been done. As a comedian, I don't want to do what's already been done, but. Yeah, it's a cool venue, but...
In order for this to have been, like, 8 Mile, there would have to have been more than two black people...
On the showcase?
At the festival.
That's a very... You bring up a very important...
When I do a joke with AIDS in it, because I'm sensitive to other people and cultures, and it's like, I see, you know, like, Weems also did, and there's nothing wrong with that, but it's still, like, there was, like, a show where we were, like, two people apart, and I felt terrified having to do an AIDS joke like 10 minutes after somebody else did. I don't think it's where you go to get discovered. It's where you go to prepare to be discovered. More.
I agree. Like, there's a lot of coveted venues to perform comedy at. Like, in LA, there's, like, Comedy Death Race, maybe one of the hottest shows in town. And you have your improvs and your laugh factories and your comedy stores on the weekends, and those are all fantastic places to showcase. But there are plenty of other places around town to really build material, and really that's all that matters as a comedian, finding a place where you can actually get a true read on whether the material is good or bad.
Yeah, and New York's great for that because, well, there's like two different types of shows, you know, like the clubs, well, a lot of the clubs are more like touristy, and it's basically like you go there to see if your stuff works on the road.
Would work in the Midwest or something. Or,
yeah, because that's who's going, right. You know, and then you go to the downtown rooms to perform for New Yorkers, and New Yorkers, you know,
they have, I think they probably have a higher standard of comedy because totally they've seen it do. All.
It's, I think, I mean, it helps in a way because, like, it's regular people who act like they're industry. So you're performing in front of them every night, which
you're
makes
right.
it so much easier when you're in front of the industry.
The same is kind of true of L.A., too. Like, Jesse and I started out in I don't know. You didn't start out in Seattle, did you?
No, Nashville.
How long have you been at Nashville? 8 years. This is 8 years doing comedy.
And you auditioned 8 times?
I think 1 year Just for Laughs didn't see me. Like I didn't have a showcase 1 year. 7 years for sure.
That's you.
Yeah. I remember it's wild just to know they have tape on me since I was 18, you know. I'm 26 now. Yeah.
Like, I started when I was 15, then I got back into it when I was, like, 19.
What were you doing in between?
High school and graduating and then doing improv and didn't go back to stand-up. It's hard to... Like, I didn't... I don't know. I don't know. I guess I just kind of...
So it was a pretty early ambition for you.
Yeah, I knew it right away.
Right away what?
Like, I just knew I wanted to do comedy.
You know, there's more ad dollars. Now it's like the internet.
Well, the bubble burst, you know. People
burst.
Got burnt too many times. And back in the day, it was plucking really these comedians out of obscurity who didn't have management. I mean, you have some people, like, in this fest. There's a good chunk of people who don't have rep and don't have agents. And, like, the fest is great for that.
Yeah,
that seems like quite a bit. I thought there would be less. Like, I think usually they reserve, like, 3 or 2. I don't know. I heard that but back in the day, I thought the fest was more about, you know, these are total unknowns. But now, like, was it 2 years ago? Like, you have Jeff Dye and, like, Eliza, who were on Last Comic Standing. And, the definition of new faces changed. Like, even me, I feel less deserving of new faces this year than, you know, when I did it when I was 18 or 19, when I had nothing then, you know, really. Like, I've done Chuck, I've done MTV, like, what do you want to call a new phase? Like, I'm grateful, like, of course, this helps tremendously.
A new face is, they certainly market it as that.
Uh-huh.
We take all these unknown comics or whatever, but then it's like...
Well, what's hilarious, though, is that, like, even in Last Comic Standing, you have these people who have presents.
Yeah, the Comedy Central presents.
And they present it to America as if, like, hey, this guy was working an office job or whatever. Or people don't really know...
But I think is, like, I kind of look at it as, like, yeah, we all have worked hard. We've all been around a while. I mean, none of us are, like, our first year in. But it's still, you know what? I am so fucking thankful people don't know who I am. And people are like, who is that guy? Because
that is such a novelty. Like, I love that, too. I like people not expecting anything and being surprised.
Because, like, look at where they're seeing you for the first time. I'm sure it's much, I mean, at least for me, and I'll speak for some of you, it's probably more ideal than a lot of the situations where you might be seen by industry.
I'm glad you're, nodding at the mic. It's good. Yeah. No, not at the mic.
Okay.
Not at the mic. No, you seem to have a lot of polish. Do you want to do, like, are you interested in, like, SNL, something like that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I auditioned last year and had a callback and everything. It was
for SNL.
Yeah,
that's huge.
Yeah, it was probably one of the best experiences of my life. And, like,
they flew you out to New York and everything.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and I did, like, 10 impressions of first audition and 10 different impressions of second audition, and I know where what I need to work on, you know. And I
well,
I
let's
I
talk about
that.
That's fascinating because I don't know anything about that. So that's
yeah, it was. It was so cool. They give you 5 minutes and you just do your stuff, you know. Usually people do, like, 3 characters and 3 impressions, and but I just did a lot of impressions just because that's my strong point right now.
Now, do you do characters? Do you want to work on?
I mean, now I have been working on some, but at that time I didn't have any.
Right.
You know, but I mean that's where I want to get back into Groundlings and just really work on my characters.
Yeah, yeah. So, but it does. You do seem to be going more in that direction of. Which basically what I'm saying is you're going to make more money than all of us in the next 5 years. Like, no, you are. Like, that's the thing is you're going to be fucking way more successful.
You guys are all great though. I really think you guys are all hilarious.
No, thank you. I think everyone in the room's really a fan of one another.
Huh?
Golden Grams, did you go buy cereal?
Yeah, I got cereal.
That's awesome. Now you're dudes, we got breakfast in half an hour. It's going to be fucking awesome. I'm so pumped. I got a meeting at 12:30. Like,
yeah. Whoa. You better get.
Well, how can you not? Like, and I was telling other people this. Like, you do comedy, like, as a comedian, and you see so much of it that you're like, okay, that you it's sort of like reading a Ziggy comic. You're like, okay, all right, that's funny. You think to yourself, that's funny. But you're jaded, you know? It's not like when you first started. But when I saw this Amp show, especially Beardy Man, it's like you're a kid again and you no longer have these preconceived notions of comedy and what's hack and what's not. You're just beaming.
Arabic, you know, descent.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
Now
my, when that happened, I actually woke up to 9/11 from my mom woke me up and I don't know what was going on. And then she was like, your dad called and he said, don't go to school. Like, don't go to school today. Like, they thought, I don't know, they, like, throw bricks at me or something. Or
right.
I still went to school.
Yeah? And everything was cool?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nobody was like, wait. Yeah, I was, like, 17 or 18.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I remember, first class was drama in the morning. Drama class. And everybody just like sat in a circle and talked about it. Just went around.
Yeah, we did some really weird, some koosh ball exercises.
You can't just go into lessons after that, you know what I mean?
We did some terrible stuff. Now, Melissa, you would have been in eighth grade?
Actually, I was a freshman when 9/11 happened. Are we talking about that? Yeah.
Yeah, because I guess I was a sophomore.
Yeah.
I don't like how I just went from Fahim, you're Afghan, to talking about 9/11. Yeah. But I guess
No. What I'm saying is, I have I have friends that are Iranian, and it was hard for them afterwards. Now this is in Brentwood, Tennessee.
Yeah.
You know, and it was hard. I was just wondering if you experiencing that, if any of that had to do with you going into comedy, or was it already a dream by then?
I don't know. I think I always liked doing entertainment stuff. Or like in school, I was always in video productions. So I was making videos and stuff and playing it over the school broadcast, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like in the mornings. Like, that was just really fun. I wanted to do stand-up for a talent show, but I had done some, like, pep assemblies or whatever, and, like, some parents complained because something was too risque, although it had already gotten passed by ASB.
What's ASB?
Associated Student Body.
Oh, okay.
Come on, man. Yeah, yeah. So, I wanted to do stand up at the talent show, and then they banned comedy from the talent show because they just didn't want to deal with the potential of any parents being offended.
What's
by
that
comedy.
Footloose bullshit?
Yeah, totally.
It's all girls school. And yeah.
What impressions did you do?
Okay, I just did singing impressions at that time. And I did, of course, Britney, Christina, Shakira, Avril. Okay, I did Ewan McGregor from Moulin Rouge.
Yeah.
And Creed, the singer from Creed.
Yeah.
It's kind of
Stapp.
A weird...
Scott Stapp.
Is that his... You know what? I never knew his name.
Yeah.
I did sophomore year talent shows. That made the mark of when I wanted to be a comedian.
So were there any? I assume the segues were pretty sloppy.
Yeah, I mean, it was just kind of a.
No, I mean, you know what I mean. Like, you go up and you have some impressions. I think it would be awkward.
Yeah.
If you didn't have comedy chops, to just be like, Now here comes Melissa. Right, she's gonna do some impressions.
Yeah.
And you go up there like, here's Christina. But then you like really sell it and belt it out. Was that awkward or did it feel good? Did it go over well?
Fun. It went really well. I got a standing ovation from the school.
Oh, that's cool.
You went
to an all-girls school?
Yes, I did.
There's so much like fucking weird like gold here in everybody's story that I want to keep going into. You know what I mean?
I need to make a story about it, but I was kind of always. I don't know. I was always by myself.
Catholic school?
Yep.
You were raised Catholic?
Yep.
You're an only child?
No. I have an older brother and younger brother and sister. They're twins. And all of us went to Catholic schools. But I've never really... Everyone now, all my brother and sister, like, we all don't really continue our religion that well and stuff. My sister goes to Berkeley and stuff, so she's a complete hippie now.
Right.
But
so you're like kind of agnostic these days?
These days, yeah, because I don't know how I feel about it. I mean, I haven't taken the time to think about that stuff.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, you can't think about making it and your place in the universe. It's one or the other. It's oh God, is Comedy Central watching me, or where do I go when I die?
I mean, I think it's. They know it's in Montreal. I told
or the
them
scope that we're
festival,
told this festival has.
I'm not sure if I even understand scope of this festival.
Yeah, I'm not sure anything came of this for me. Well, but
but they do understand though. It's like the Chuck thing and then MTV seeing their son on TV. They see like tinges of potential success and this show called Disaster Date. Where it's like punked for dating. You root for your fellow comedian.
That's been the most surprising thing to me, and that I've had the hardest time adjusting to is like how supportive it really is, and that everybody was like cheering each other. Because I mean, there were a few New York people that I don't know very well. That have been nothing but just like really nice, like two or three of them that I barely ever see, like just fucking. Because here's what's gonna happen 20 years from now when we don't make it, we're gonna have Montreal flashbacks. We're just gonna be like, oh man, what's that, Mr. Singer? You think I'm funny? You believe in me? That's where he's at.
I'll showcase, if it comes up again. But just the whole point is that like, I really couldn't get up at the Improv. I couldn't get up at the Laugh Factory. I couldn't get up at the Store.
And this is all because
recently,
of
the stores. Yeah. Of all the clubs, like recently, the Store's been giving me the most love. They've been pretty cool. But this has been a recent development. But the 4 years in LA, I'm like a comedy island. Like I don't have anybody like vouching for me or like somewhere to put me on a stage or some sort of spotlight. And so it's really cool to get this just based off of doing comedy around town, like unorthodox spots or the Ice House Annex, like nobody really
like what kind
there.
Of shows where are the crowds like what's the
like
average
I would do
amount
bowling
of people?
Alley in Orange County, Lucky Strike. It's not super glamorous, but it's like a decent enough crowd to gauge material and build stuff. And then I would do, you have your little weird spots that aren't glamorous at all, like the top three clubs in LA.
Here's
to still get something like this is just really cool, and it's cool that it boils down to the comedy, and not what, who vouches for you.
Yeah. Here's a question: Did every joke that you guys do tonight has it at least bombed a few times?
Yeah. In getting ready for this showcase set, I did the Ice House Annex, which is. Hit and miss. It's in Pasadena, which is predominantly Latino, and certain things don't go over, like the industry stuff doesn't go over that well there because they just don't get it. Like the looking over the shoulder thing, when talking to people, and then like the references to Philip Seymour Hoffman and John Turturro and all that. Like, it's not gonna work at all.
Because to me, like that, like. I feel like the moment that your jokes bomb is such a huge thing when you have to decide how much you love them. Like, that's why, like, I felt confident during this whole thing because all of my jokes that I did have bombed so many times. Like, I don't, and in a comfortable way, by that I mean I don't want people to see me doing new stuff and go, how the fuck did this guy get in?
They won't, dude. Yeah, fuck him.
Yeah.
Fuck him, man. Guys, let's eat breakfast. Who's on board? Thank you so much, you guys.
And a great breakfast it was. What a week. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. And another big thanks to Fahim Anwar, Melissa Villasenor, and Mike Lawrence. All very funny. Make sure to check them out. Check out their stuff. And thanks for listening. Tune in next week, Saturday morning. We're going to have Andy Wood, co-founder of Bridgetown Comedy Festival. Get into it. All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.